Chapter 7. A spasm of anger swept over Pitt. He was half tempted to slam his fist against the door, but one look at the heavy planking changed his mind. Turning again to the corridor, he found it still empty. He shivered unconsciously. He had no illusions as to what lay ahead. It was certain now that Von Till never meant for him to leave the villa alive. He remembered the knife and felt a tinge of assurance as he slipped it out of his sock. The flickering yellow light from the candles, mounted in rusted metal holders high on the walls, glinted dully on the blade and made the tiny pointed knife look woefully inadequate for the job of self-defense. Only one comforting thought ran through Pitt's mind. However small, the knife was better than nothing. Suddenly, a blast of heavy, chilling air blew through the corridor like an invisible hand and snuffed out the candles, leaving Pitt standing in a sea of suffocating blackness. His senses strained to penetrate the gloom, but could detect no sound, no glimmer of light. "Now the fun begins," he murmured, bracing his body for the unknown. Pitt's spirits touched zero, and he could feel the first terror-striking symptoms of panic edging rapidly into his mind. He remembered reading somewhere that nothing is more horrifying or uncomprehendable to the human mind than total darkness. To not know or be able to perceive what lies beyond one's sight or touch acts on the brain like a short circuit in a computer. It runs amok. What the brain cannot see, it creates, usually some nightmarish event that is grossly exaggerated or embellished like a delusion of being bitten by a shark or run over by a locomotive while locked in a closet. Recalling the semi-amusing phraseology, he grinned in the darkness, and the first probes of panic slowly reversed into a sensation of logic calm. His next thought was to use the Zippo to relight the candles. But if someone or something were waiting in ambush further down the corridor, he reasoned, it would be best to remain in pitch darkness and keep them at the same disadvantage. Stooping, he quickly unlaced his shoes, discarding them, and began inching along the cool wall. The corridor led him past several wooden doors, each barred by large bands of iron. He was in the midst of testing one of the doors when he paused, listening intently. There was a sound somewhere ahead in the blackness. It was indefinable and inexplicable, but quite audible. It could have been a moan or a growl, Pitt didn't know which. Then the sound faded and died into nothingness. Determined now that a real menace was waiting, some creature of the dark that was physical, could make noises and probably reason, spurred Pitt's sense of caution. He lay down on the corridor floor and crept ahead without sound, his ears listening and his sensitive fingertips feeling out the way. The floor was smooth and unyielding, and in spots it was damp. He crawled on through an oily slime that soiled his uniform, soaking into the material and causing it to stick to his skin. He mentally cursed his uncomfortable predicament as he crept onward. After what seemed like hours, Pitt imagined he had dragged his stomach over at least 2 miles of cement, but his rational mind knew it was close to 80 feet. The musty smell of antiquity lay on the floor and reminded him of the interior of an old steamer trunk that once belonged to his grandfather. He remembered hiding in its dark cubicle and pretending he was a stowaway on a ship bound for the mysterious Orient. It's strange, he thought incongruously, how smells can bring back dormant and forgotten memories. Abruptly, the feel of the floor and walls changed from smooth concrete to rough jointed masonry. The passageway left the more modern construction behind and became old and hand-hewn. Pitt's hand felt the wall stop and branch to the right. A gentle touch of air on his cheeks told him he had come to a cross passage. He froze and listened. There it was again. The sound was halting and furtive. This time it was a clicking noise, like the kind long-nailed animals make on a hard-surfaced floor. Pitt shivered uncontrollably and broke out in a cold sweat. He pressed his body flat into the damp, cobbled ground, knife pointed in the direction of the approaching sound. The clicking became louder. Then it stopped and a torturous silence set in. Pitt tried to contain his breathing to hear better. All his ears could detect was his own heartbeat. Something was out there, not 10 feet away. He compared himself with a blind man who was being stalked down a back street alley. The eerie, spine-chilling atmosphere of the surroundings numbed his thinking with a sense of hopelessness. He shook it off, forcing his mind to concentrate on methods of combating the unseen terror. The musty stench of the tunnel suddenly became overpowering, nearly making him sick. He also detected a faint animal odor. But from what kind of animal? Quickly, a plan formed in Pitt's mind, and he decided to take a gamble on the unknown quantity. The Zippo came out of his pocket. He flipped the little wheel against the flint and held it a brief instant until the wick burned brightly. He cast it up and into the air ahead. The tiny flame sailed through the darkness and illuminated two glowing fluorescent eyes, backed by a giant shadow that danced hellishly on the walls and floor of the passageway. The lighter clinked to the ground, its flame snuffed out by the fall. A low, menacing growl came from the eyes and echoed through the stone labyrinth. Pitt reacted instantly and coiled on the hard floor. Then he whipped over on his back and thrust the knife up into the dark void, holding the handle tightly in the sweating palms of both hands. He could not see his ghostly attacker, but he knew now what it was. The beast had noted Pitt's exact location in the brief flickering flame from the lighter. It hesitated for an instant, then it sprang. The ageless animal instinct of sniffing its prey before attacking spelled the big animal's doom. The delay gave Pitt precious time for his sudden evasive body roll, and the huge white dog overshot his quarry. The action happened with such blinding speed that all Pitt could recall afterwards was the feel of the knife slicing into a soft, furry surface and the wetness of heavy liquid splattering in his face. The growl of the killer turned to the howl of the mortally wounded as the knife laid open the great shepherd's flank just behind the ribs. The walls of the stone corridors thundered in a chorus of reverberating roars that burst from the thick, hairy throat a split second before the 180 pounds of animal fury crashed into the vertical stone beyond Pitt and fell heavily to the ground, thrashing in spastic agony for several moments before dying. At first, Pitt thought the dog had missed. Then he felt a sting across his chest, and he knew it hadn't. He lay without moving, listening to the death throes in the blackness. Long minutes after the passageway returned to a ghostly stillness, he remained limp on the uneven floor. The tension finally passed, and his muscles started to loosen, and the pain began to arrive in earnest, clearing his mind to a new sharpness. Pitt slowly rose to his feet and leaned wearily against the unseen blood-splattered wall. Another shudder shook his body, and he waited until his nerves calmed before stumbling into the darkness ahead, where he shuffled his feet back and forth until they came in contact with his lighter. He lighted the little metallic box and surveyed his wounds. Blood seeped from 4 evenly spaced furrows that began just above the left nipple and extended up and diagonally over his chest to the right shoulder. The claw marks were deep in the skin, but their depth barely penetrated the muscle tissue. Pitt's shirt hung down like a shredded flag of red and khaki. All he could do for the moment was tear off the dangling strips of ragged cloth and pad the gashes. It would have been the easiest thing in the world to collapse to the ground and let a wave of comforting unconsciousness gather him in its trough. The temptation was strong, but he resisted it. Instead, he stood on steady legs with a quartz-clear mind, planning his next move. After another minute, Pitt walked over to the dog. Holding the lighter aloft, he stared down at the dead animal. It was laying on its side, the entrails in a gruesome heap outside the body cavity. Trails of blood streaked the floor, running in separate little streams toward an unseen low point somewhere in the direction from which he had crawled. The weariness and the pain dropped from Pitt like a falling coat at the gruesome sight. Rage and anger engulfed his body and soared from the state of fearful, life-saving caution to a state of uncaring indifference toward danger and death. One thought held and gripped his mind. Murder Von Till. His next step sounded simple, absurdly simple. He must find a way out of the labyrinth. The odds seemed long and the chances hopeless. Yet the thought of failure never entered his mind. Von Till's words about the next flight of the Yellow Albatross settled any doubts for him. The gears in Pitt's head meshed in analytical thought, spitting out facts and possibilities. Now that the scheming old German knew the first attempt was remaining anchored off Thassos, he would have it attacked by the Albatross. It would be too risky for the old plane to try another afternoon attack, Pitt reasoned. Von Till, no doubt, would send it aloft as soon as possible, probably at dawn. Gunn and his crew must be warned in time. He glanced at the luminous dial on his wristwatch. The needle-like hands registered 9:55. Dawn would break at approximately 4:40, he figured, give or take 5 minutes. That left 6 hours and 45 minutes for him to find an exit from this crypt and alert the ship. Pitt shoved the knife in his belt, snapped the lighter shut to conserve fuel, and started up the left passageway toward the source of a very slight air current. The going was easier now. Pitt was damned if he'd crawl any more. He hurried without hesitation. The passage narrowed to 3 feet in width, but the roof stayed out of reach above his head. Suddenly, his outstretched hand struck solid wall. The passage ceased. It was a dead end. He flicked the lighter and saw his mistake. The air current came from a small crack between the rocks. An audible humming noise also issued from the crack. It was the sound of an electric motor, hidden somewhere beyond the wall in the bowels of the mountain. Pitt listened for a moment, but then the sound ceased. If at first you don't succeed, he mused aloud, try another passage. He retraced his steps and quickly reached the intersection, this time taking the tunnel directly opposite the one he had cautiously crawled through. He lengthened his stride and pounded on into the impenetrable darkness, the cool, damp paving numbing his stocking feet. He idly wondered how many other men, or women for that matter, had Von Till literally thrown to the dog. In spite of the near chilly air, the sweat ran off his body in streams. The pain across his chest seemed remote, too remote to belong to him. He could feel the blood mingling with the sweat and running down into his pants. He kept going and was determined to keep going until he dropped. A thought tugged at his mind to slow down and rest, but he rejected it and quickened his pace. Again and again his groping hands and the periodic but welcome flicker of the lighter discovered new passages that branched off into endless nothingness. In some, the rocks had caved in, sealing them off, probably forever. The lighter was on its last breath, the fluid almost gone. Pitt used it as little as possible, relying more and more on his bruised and scraped fingers. An hour passed, and then another. He continued on, pushing his tired and torn body through the ancient passages. His foot struck something solid, and he pitched forward onto the bottom steps of a stone stairway. The edge of the fourth step caught him across the nose, gashing the bridge to the bone. Blood spurted down his cheeks and coated his lips. All at once, the exhaustion, the emotional drain, and the despair flooded over his battered body, and he folded limply on the stairs. Everything began to slow down. He lay and listened to the blood drip on the step beneath his head. A soft white cloud materialized out of the black gloom and gently covered him. Pitt shook his sore and fuzzy head violently, trying to clear the cobwebs. Slowly, very slowly, like a man lifting a tremendous weight, he raised his head and shoulders and began agonizingly to crawl up the stairway. Step by step he struggled until at last he reached his destination. A webbing of heavy bars marked the top of the stairway. The grillwork was ancient and heavily rusted, but still thick and strong enough to hold back an elephant. Pitt hauled himself painfully onto the landing. A curtain of fresh air greeted his skin, replacing the musty odor of the labyrinth. He gazed through the rectangles between the bars, and his spirit soared at the sight of the stars blinking in the sky. Back in the winding passageways, he had felt like a dead man in a casket. It seemed like an eternity since he saw the outside world. He pulled himself to his feet and shook the bars. There was no movement. The lock on the massive gate had recently been welded closed. He checked the width between each bar, searching for the largest opening. The third space from the left held the greatest spread, about 8.5 inches. He laboriously stripped off all his clothes and set them on the other side of the barrier. Next, he smeared his blood into the sweat and exhaled until his lungs arched in protest. Then, slipping his head between the bars, he strained to push 190 pounds into the outside landscape. The rust from the bars flaked off against his slippery skin and stuck to the glue-like blood. A racking moan of pain escaped his mouth as his genitals scraped over the ragged edge of one bar. He desperately clawed at the ground and gave a final heave. His body came free. Pitt grasped his scraped crotch and sat up, ignoring the stabbing pain and unable to believe his success. He was out, but was he in the clear? His eyes, now acutely used to the dark, darted around the immediate area. The vaulted bars of the labyrinth faced onto the stage entrance of a great amphitheater. The ponderous structure reflected a vaguely unearthly glow from the white light of the stars and the moon, whose imperfect circle peeped over a shadowed mountain summit. The architecture was Grecian, but the massiveness of the construction signified Roman hands. The edge of the round stage was separated from the theater's upper rim by almost 40 rows of steeply banked seats. Except for the invisible flight of nocturnal insects, the entire amphitheater was deserted. Pitt slipped into the remains of his uniform. Knotting the damp, sticky cloth of his shirt, he stiffly wrapped his chest with a crude bandage. Just to be able to walk and breathe in the warm evening air gave him a new surge of strength. He had gambled back there in the labyrinth, and without Theseus' string to guide him, had beat the immense odds and won. Laughter rang from his lips and traveled in loud echoes to the last row of the amphitheater and back. The pain and the exhaustion was forgotten as he visualized Von Till's face at their next meeting. "How would you like a ticket to see that?" Pitt shouted at his non-attendant gallery. He waited, caught in the mood of the eerie setting. There was no reply, no applause, only the silence of the warm Thassos night. For a moment he thought he saw a ghostly Roman audience cheering him on. But the toga-clad figures faded mutely away into the white marble, leaving Pitt with no answer to his lonely invitation. He looked up at the maze of stars in the diamond clear air to get his bearings. Polaris blinked its friendly light in return and advertised approximate north. Pitt's eyes scanned a full 360-degree circle of sky. Something was wrong. Taurus and the Pleiades should have been overhead. Instead, they were far to the east. "God damn," Pitt cursed aloud, looking at his watch. It was 3:22. Only 1 hour and 18 minutes before dawn. Somehow he had lost nearly 5 hours. What happened, he asked himself. Where was the time lost? Then he realized that he must have passed out after colliding with the stairway. There was no time to lose. He hurriedly walked across the stone-paved stage and presently discovered, in the little available light, a small path leading down the mountainside. He took it and set out on a race to beat the sun.